This is Julia Sahibian for Chronicles Radio, welcoming you to another edition of Dispatches. And today I have the pleasure of interviewing Steve Seeley, who is a very good friend and somebody that I have a tremendous amount of respect for. And besides, he's a lot of fun. And in our show, as you know, we always ask two questions. And the first one is, please say a few things about the nature of your relationship to Chogyam Trungpa. And the second one is, how does your life today express the commitment to serving his vision? So now I would like to turn it to Steve and begin with, Steve, tell us a little bit about your relationship to Trungpa Rinpoche. What was it like?
All right. Well, first I'd like to say good morning.
Good morning.
What was it like? Well, basically, I think of it as a very powerful love affair. Full of everything that a love affair is. The ups, the downs, that incredible feeling that you get in your heart when you're with the other person, the disappointment of not being able to be with him when you want to be with him. The joy of saying I love you and hearing him say I love you back. The sadness of having to let him go. I honestly feel he's very much with us now, with me. In his introduction, Walter Fordham talked about, mentioned this quality of us, the older students who spent time, had the good fortune to spend time with the Vajradhara, I can't remember what Walter said, but my own sense of it is that I feel like a carrier of the Vajradhara virus. And it's a really good virus. And it's, you know, he's doing his work, continues to do his work on me. And I feel a duty, or duty, as he would say, to embody that quality of being infected with him and sharing that, just simply sharing that. Now, I mean, I don't particularly think of this as a big project. You know, I don't every day say, oh, well, today I'm going to go out there and infect people with the Vajradhara virus. I mean, it's quite natural. I mean, I'm infected,
The Garuda flu.
Yeah, the Garuda flu. Okay. It's pretty easy on some level because I'm infected and so it naturally infects others. You know, I was talking to my wife about this a little bit just before I came down, and she said that she was talking to someone this week who did a Shambhala training level I taught recently and has been doing other Shambhala training levels. And the other person's comment was that she felt that she really could know the Vajradhara through the students that knew him. And my wife also feels the same way, that she feels like she's getting to know him personally. Not as a memory, not in a, you know, conceptual way or as a theory, but actually getting to know him. And she also mentioned how many people have dreams about him that have never met him, and they're living, you know, they're actual. They're actually interacting with the Vajradhara, and when I hear these types of dreams, it's like, oh yeah, that's him, you know.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because I think one of the things that we're really trying to do with this show is talk about how lineage is continuous. That awakened mind and continuity of the blessings of lineage is completely accessible. And in some ways, all we have to do is kind of have enough devotion and enough discipline and being willing to get out of the way. And it communicates in its own, in its own behalf, so to speak. Before we move
to talk about the areas that you're working on right now and plan to work on in the future, let me just ask you very briefly, did your service to Trungpa Rinpoche fall around any one particular area? Were you mostly Dorje Khasang? Were you a teacher? Were you a cook? What role did you have in his mandala, or various roles?
Various. I would say the key role was being kusung, or personal attendant, in his service. I first started practicing in 1975 when I met him in Vancouver. And then in 1979 he became kusung. I would say that being in his service in that way was probably the most powerful aspect of my relationship with him. I spent time with him and carried out his orders or his intentions, tried to understand his wishes, tried to guess his wishes, and learned a lot through that whole process, needless to say. In fact, I was even telling my wife recently that I feel like kusung training is the best possible training you could have to be a father.
Service. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Selfless service.
Yes.
And understanding the mandala principle and the whole thing. So, and so I remained kusung until his death, his physical death. Probably one of the other major aspects was teaching Shambhala training.
Which you're still doing quite actively.
Which I'm still doing quite actively, yeah. and I have to say about that I'm kind of blown away by how those particular teachings are still growing in me. I find more and more inspiring and more and more important to this world, to the students I work with, to each other, you know.
In terms of the variety of ways in which we still serve Chogyam Trungpa, I think that you have managed to distinguish yourself in many ways, and in particular, because you have carried both teaching Shambhala training and the Shambhala School of Buddhist Studies, and you are also extremely active in your role of helping to bring about Natartha Institute with Trungpa Rinpoche. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what inspired you to actually work with Trungpa Rinpoche, how you found a sense of continuity of any, or something different? Is it the same? Is it different? How does it manifest? Tell me a little bit about how your training as a Vajrayana student and as a member of Sangha expresses itself in your relationship with Pumla Rinpoche and his Sangha.
Okay. Just to make a technical correction, I've taught quite a bit in Shambhala, but I have not actually taught in the Shambhala School of Buddhist Studies.
Well, that will be your future then. Right. We'll have to make sure that we get you there.
Okay. I think this is an interesting question. I think I was attracted to Trungpa Rinpoche because he reminded me of the Vajradhara in many ways. One is his excellent command of the English language, like uncanny command, unlike a few other teachers I've ever met. And of course, the boss man, as far as command of the English language beyond anything that any of us have mastered, was the Vajradhara. But Trungpa Rinpoche has a very powerful understanding of the language and tremendous appreciation for Western culture, which I think a lot of... you don't find that in a lot of teachers from Tibet or the East. He really loves this culture. He loves us. And again, that very much reminds me of how much Vidyadhara loved us and loved this culture. How much he was willing to just jump in with both feet just boom, let's, you know, without reservation. So that really attracted me to Puma Rinpoche. Also, I could tell, or I knew that Pema Brahmshe had and has tremendous respect for the Vidyadhara and how he taught. The first thing he did when I asked him to be my teacher about 10 years ago was he immediately composed a spontaneous poem, which I brought with me. And I'll read it for you.
Wonderful.
It's quite short. He just composed it right on the spot. Very first thing. Yes, I'll accept you as my student. And then he sat back, he looked in space, and then he spoke this. Drunk with bliss, crazy with prajna, smiles with upaya, I prostrate to you, Vidyadhara.
Very interesting. Very interesting. So it's almost like seeing Trungpa Rinpoche in you and taking it forward. Is mm-hmm. that more or less how you kind of read that, or?
Yeah. First of all, confirming that my heart love or heart connection is there, and that that Puna Brahmshe had no intention of like trying to skew that or, you know, take over or anything like that. And also, yeah, confirming the power of that connection and how that could move further, and then just holding up a mirror for me, so I could look in the mirror and say, oh yeah.
Interesting.
You know, that very wakeful kind of aspect. Yeah.
Let me ask you something. You talked about Punda Rinpoche's capacity to work with Western students and function and articulate the Dharma within Western culture. Mm-hmm. Has Punda Rinpoche also ventured into what one would consider non-traditional ways of teaching Dharma, meaning talking about psychology or talking about the arts or getting involved in speaking to business people? Or is he still more traditionally dedicated to the traditional teaching of the Dharma, such as his work with the Tartar Institute?
Mm-hmm. There's two aspects of that question. One is that his sangha is very young and is centered in Seattle. And he bought a building there a couple years ago, and it's called Nalanda West, and it's very traditional. And he's made it clear that he sees the priority as laying the foundation of pure Buddhism, or, you know, the undiluted, unmixed form. And so you can see that, like, when you go to Nalanda West, it's, you know, it feels very powerfully Buddhist. But he's asked everyone there to start creating programs that are starting to cast a wide net.
Mm-hmm. To push the boundary of Buddha Dharma.
Yeah, bringing other disciplines in and other connections. Doing other types of programs than purely Buddhist programs. It has kind of it's starting to have like a Naropa University type character, you know. I wish I could give some specific examples, but I can't quite recall. They've just done or are about to do a course on death and dying, but not just having Buddhists talking about death and dying, but, you know, people from different disciplines and traditions. And then as far as a very sort of traditionally oriented institution like Nitarta Institute, it's very interesting, Julia, that this institute is run by three Shambhalians.
Yes.
Like, the three directors are Scott Wellenbach, Phil Stanley, and myself. And it shows a lot of trust on the part of Pulna Rinpoche to say to us, okay, you guys do it, you know. And I think he really appreciates how we do this thing. And I would say that many of the ways that we were taught by the Vidyadhara come into the Institute. Mm-hmm. And it's very non-traditional from that perspective. People that come say, wow, I had no idea that this would be basically like a practice program. I mean, I feel like powerful stuff is happening. It's not just an intellectual thing. It's because we're bringing that mind of practice into it, you know. We're not just reading words. We're not just sort of learning stuff. I mean, who cares, you know? If it's not joined with practice, then it's meaningless. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is the legacy of the Vidyadhara. I mean, he was very uncompromising about that. Practice is it. You have to practice. And he said, remember that one time in Boulder, he put out this letter, it was in the late 70s, and he said, I want you to remember that if you are not practicing, then you have no connection with me whatsoever. And it was just, oh.
Yeah, at one point I think he actually said that if he didn't practice, he might as well be selling ties in 42nd Street. I don't know if you remember talking about that. And one of the things I also wanted to talk about is, in that sense of actually bringing our practice into everyday life, is there a set of teachings that Pulna Rinpoche is presenting or encouraging that have to do with how you actually live your secular life? The reason I'm asking this is one time I remember looking at the Complete Guide of Buddhism in America, I think the book was called, mm-hmm. and every time that it covered anything related to Shambhala, one of the things that I was very interested in was that we have really done an amazing job of coming up with things like rites of passage. Mm-hmm. We have done, as a community, thanks to Trungpa Rinpoche's inspiration, a pathway of how to raise children, how to mm-hmm. raise practitioners. It's almost like a curriculum for transforming your life into a sacred world mm-hmm. where you can move about as someone who is expressing mm-hmm. wisdom and quite aware of our confusion. Mm-hmm. I'd be quite curious, is Pulna Rinpoche thinking that way too, or trying to teach children? How is that coming along? I ask you because you're a recent father, so.
Yes. well, again, you know, his sangha is relatively small compared to our sangha. Like in Seattle, which is his main center, there's maybe 50 or 60 members. And there has been very few children. So the need hasn't been there in a way. Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as that specific aspect goes. Now, every year he does a sangha retreat where he gathers everybody in his entire sangha who can come for 10 days of teachings. And so for the first time this year, there will be four babies there, uh-huh. one of which is mine.
So I'm curious, in terms of your relationship to Pulna Rinpoche's mm-hmm. Sangha and him mm-hmm. being your main teacher, mm-hmm. how does that work in your own case mm-hmm. in relationship to working with Sakyamuni Rinpoche? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, which, I mean, sometimes I think about it, like, how could this possibly work? And actually it works fine, partly because I don't think about it too much. But I connected to Pulna Rinpoche through karma. I mean, you know, there was an obvious connection that happened. I met him. We got along very well, and he was clearly willing to carry on the Vidyadhara's tradition of giving me a hard time when I needed it, and giving me advice when I needed it, and giving me a helping hand when I needed it. From a place of wisdom. And that's what I wanted. Mm-hmm. I didn't find that I could have that personal connection with the Sakyong, particularly at that time. And frankly, was even a little resentful about that at that time. And what's emerged for me over this time in relation to Sakyong is tremendous, just unbelievable appreciation for what he's doing and how he's evolved and sort of his job. In relation to little me, his job is not to be my personal guru. That's just not what's happening. And, you know, in the sense of having a one-on-one, face-to-face relationship, what he's doing is creating a world, and I'm thrilled to be a part of that world, the Kingdom of Shambhala. And I have tremendous respect and increasing awe for him as he goes about this job. And I sort of philosophically accept the fact that he's not going to have the time or the disposition to meet with a lot of people individually, but that he's going to be our ruler and everything that that means. So I'm quite happy to accept him as my teacher on that level and to follow his command on that level. And meanwhile, I also have this other relationship, which I find very helpful and beneficial in other ways. So I guess it's all about service, you know, like I'm serving the kingdom, and I'm serving Pulnapa Rinpoche's vision, which is all about bringing the tradition that the Vidyadhara came from and was trained within and became a Kenpo within, in pure form, bringing it over here, undiluted, with full depth and breadth, and doing that in the context of Shambhala. So I'm quite happy to do that.
Okay. So to bring things sort of back where we started, and to probably almost come to the near close of our interview, if I were to say to you that you're speaking to Trungpa Rinpoche, and you're going to actually do a doha about how much you love him and how much you work with Pungdo Rinpoche as a way to love him, what would you say?
Ah, the proverbial trick question. King of the world, master, lover of the world, you've shown me my heart, my eyes, my tongue. I feel awesome gratitude for having the opportunity to continually serve you and to know that magic is real because of you. Without you, magic would be something longed for as opposed to experienced. And I'm so grateful for all the work that you have done and continue to do, and request and supplicate you to remain with us forever.
Thank you. Thank you. So as the first dot of Dharma bleeds into Steve Seeley's life, may the stroke of his service wake all of us up. Steve, thank you very much. And the best of luck with your family and with your children and with your guru and the work that you're doing for Pumba Rinpoche and for his Sangha. And I want to thank you on behalf of the Chronicles for coming to be with us today. And thank you. And good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Julia. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you for listening to Chronicles Radio. Next Thursday, June 8th, dispatches will not be heard. Instead, Chronicles Radio will bring you our coverage of Blossoming of the Sun, the three-day wedding festival of Semo Sein and Sakyong Wipom Rinpoche. Please watch the Chronicles homepage for updates and news about our coverage of the wedding festival. Please tune into dispatches again on June 15th for Julia's conversation with Carolyn Rose Gimion. Until next time, this is Chronicles Radio saying goodnight.